Hello and welcome to the Hit Shuffle Podcast. I'm your host, Matt.
And I am your host, Dave. Welcome to episode 25.
25.
What have you been listening to the past week, Matt?
So this week I have been kind of going back, not going back as a song from last year, but...
Well, that's back.
It is back to a song. It's a very mellow song. I actually found it on TikTok, which is weird.
Yeah.
It is by an artist. Her name is Annie Blackman. And the song is called Glitch, off of her All of It album from 2022. It's a very mellow acoustic song. I'll play it for you later. I probably sent it to you.
You have to check that out and see if I know it or not.
Yeah.
I only take a couple sips in simulation theories. Religion for sociopaths. I watched a doc. It really scared me. I can't get those 90 minutes back. If we're all ones and zeros... Why do I feel so blue? Who cares if it's constructed? I'd still die if I jumped off the roof.
And then on the other end of it, this time I did go back a little bit to 1997.
Now that's back. That's back a bit.
To a little band called The Offspring.
Ooh.
Listening to All I Want. Also, so it kind of coincides. I get these cravings to play Crazy Taxi.
Understandable.
And whenever I get cravings to play Crazy Taxi, The Offspring pops into my head because they're on the soundtrack.
I get that. I have those kind of mental connections.
Okay. Yeah. Day after day.
So what have you been listening to?
I have been definitely going back, not quite that far. Checking out the Hidden in Plain View self-titled EP.
Oh, so good.
Yes. Definitely a classic. I think we covered at least one song off of that. Just, you know, super, super good early 2000s. I don't even know, because it wasn't exactly pop punk.
It's especially
that EP. There's a lot of like weird kind of. It's almost its own sound.
Yeah, it's definitely a pop punk emo hybridish kind of thing.
There's nothing else that has that vibe. I don't know. No. That EP has its own kind of thing.
This puzzled look you said to me says you put me back together. Her head's down. She waits patiently.
And then a little bit later than that, the Front Bottoms, also self-titled album.
Oh, nice.
Their first full length.
I was listening to that not that long ago.
Just some real, real good.
It's just real good.
Sad boy acoustic fun time. I don't know. The Front Bottoms is just great songwriting and coincidentally all self-titled things.
Yeah, you're on a self-titled kick this week.
Apparently.
There is a map in my room, on the wall of my room, and I've got big, big plans. But I could see them slipping through, almost feel them slipping through the palms of my sweaty hands. And I move slow, just slow enough to make you uncomfortable.
Well, if you want to hear those songs and the other songs we've talked about on the show before, you can check it out on our Spotify playlist, the Hit Shuffle Podcast playlist. And you can find them on our website, hitshufflepodcast.com.
/Matt the Guy.
That's a reference to a now old episode. So yeah, we'll be right back and I will be going first.
Yes. All right, we're back. Matt, you're up first, so let's get the roll and see what we get.
12.
12, nice MIDI roll.
All right, so we got Your Stories, My Alibis by Matchbook Romance.
Old school.
Hell yeah. All right. That was Your Stories, My Alibis from Matchbook Romance off the Stories and Alibis album. What a classic.
Definitely. That's like an iconic like emo scene album to me, at least.
I agree.
I was surprised getting into the research. I don't know. I thought that this was, I guess, bigger and more influential than it seems to have been.
It seemed to have been, around us at least, it was a very popular album. But like we were discussing, I think it's because it sits kind of right in the middle. You have your screamo elements and you have your emo elements, and it kind of sits right between that. So the hardcore screamo kids didn't like it, and the hardcore emo kids didn't like it. But those crossover crowd was really into it.
Yeah, like us, who like both sides of the coin. Yeah, it's incredibly well-crafted music. Like,
oh, it is.
Especially for the time and for the style of music, like there was a lot of just like crap coming out.
Yeah, there really was.
I mean, a lot of people phoning and like not putting a lot of effort into the music, just trying to jump on the scene. But I mean, this is very well-written, like technical music.
The whole album is great.
It's just, I mean, every instrument, like I'm kind of surprised really that there was so little in looking up the band. Now it could be, I don't know, maybe regional, because like they're from New York, so maybe us
possibly, yeah,
being on the East Coast, like East Coast, we got more exposure. But I thought they were, you know, big.
Yeah, I mean, they were on Epitaph, so they had the range. Like they were on Punk-O-Ramas, and they were on all kinds of other stuff that you'd think they would have gotten bigger than they were. I think that when people started paying attention to them was too late.
Yeah, because they only had two albums, and then...
But everyone was obsessed with the second one, with Voices.
Yeah, which, I mean, that is a good album, and
Monsters is a great song. Yeah,
but that was also, like, they went in a very different musical direction with the second album, which I read that they intended to do. So this kind of, really, this album stands alone.
Yeah.
Because they did put out an EP shortly before this, which I
like
believe...
Right before this.
Sounds very similar.
Yes, it does.
But then that's it. So you kind of just have like the EP and this album as their like emo music or whatever. But I wish there was more. Like there's so many songs off this album that I remember listening to over and over and like wanting to learn the guitar riffs for. And
I still listen to this album over and over. Now, I knew that I found them kind of right as they were putting out this album. I didn't realize they'd been around since 97.
Yeah, because they didn't put out the first EP until 2003.
Yeah.
But I guess that kind of at the time there was, you know, the band formed, I guess, when they were young, and it was a lot of, you know, just playing local shows.
Probably, yeah.
Band practice and stuff. And
so eventually somebody was like, hey, let's get serious with this thing. And then they put out their EP and very shortly after that put out their album.
Yeah, and I mean, all on Epitaph, which was an influential and pretty important label in the scene at the time.
Oh, absolutely, especially mid to early 2000s.
Yeah, I mean, we listened to probably most of the Epitaph lineup.
Yeah, and I was listening to all the Punk-O-Rama albums and stuff like that. But like we said, they released their EP, they released this album, and they released Voices.
Several years later?
It's a couple years later. Then in 2007, they're like, yeah, we're done. For now.
Announced via a MySpace bulletin.
Oh, yeah. Top 8, baby.
The good old days.
That's probably why we can't find a whole bunch on it, because it's probably all on MySpace.
Which is now gone.
Which is fucking gone.
Thanks, JT.
If only we could go back.
Instead of bringing sexy back, why don't you bring our old MySpace data back?
Right? Yeah.
So, anyway...
Now, their song Monsters from their second album did appear on a lot of game soundtracks.
Yeah, that was, I mean, for a band of this type, that song got a ton of exposure. Yeah,
including Guitar Hero 3.
Yes.
It's a fun song to play.
It is. It's a fun, that was one of the most enjoyable songs, if I remember correctly. Just that riff, like everything about that riff, even when you put it in Guitar Hero, is just great.
I can probably still fumble my way through the solo for that song.
Yeah, I do. I can still play it all except for the quick hammer-on and pull-off part, which I've never been able to nail quite right. Yeah. I don't know. There's just something about that.
Like, I had to work through and remember the climbs and stuff, but I could still probably pull it off. I played the shit out of that song.
Which, I mean, how you get like an emo band and then they rip out a solo like that, which doesn't even remotely sound, you know, emo music or anything.
No, it's like those punk bands that pull out like hair metal solos.
Sometimes you know what the guitarist does in his spare time.
Yeah. Now, unfortunately, there's not a whole lot about Matchbook Romance.
No, I think it was the MySpace era. So most of their online presence would have been MySpace.
Yeah.
So, you know, by the time Facebook and Instagram and whatnot were big, the band was already done. So I was looking, they do have an Instagram, but they pretty much just post like their Spotify stats, and like they released a vinyl for Voices, which was the number one selling vinyl on the website they released it on. So,
oh, shit. I mean, I didn't know that.
Yeah, somebody from the band is still
somebody's
at least
keeping up with it.
Something on the social, but there's very little past their initial breakup. They apparently reunited in 2015 for some amount of time.
Well, I know they played a few shows in 2009, right after the hiatus. But then, yeah, it looked like there was something around 2015.
Yeah, there's a mention they would play certain dates on 2015 Warped Tour, but the links took me to 2011 Warped Tour page, so I'm not 100% on that. And it does have 2015 and 2016 as a second set of years active.
Yeah, I saw that.
So something must have happened, but the evidence of it is not easy to find on the internet.
All I'm saying, if you're out there, Matchbook Romance, because you're obviously listening to us.
Clearly.
It's 2023. This album came out in 2003. Make the tour happen.
20-year anniversary. Everybody's doing it, especially emo bands. You know, that kind of from the scene. That's the big thing right now.
Yeah.
We're all in our 30s now. Everybody's got money to go to the tour. So, you know, get some vinyls, get some t-shirts and hoodies. Do that 20th anniversary tour, you know?
I'd be all about that shit. All about that shit.
I mean, I feel like they could hook up with a few choice other similar bands from the era.
Small to Ashes.
Now that would be oh man.
I don't even know.
I'd take people out to get tickets to that show.
That's right. I'd be climbing over motherfuckers at the box office. Now the actual song, into the actual song. That intro is cool.
A good old reverse delay.
Yes.
Which I don't know how it ended up, but that ended up being like a super emo thing.
It really did. Now, I mean, this is the first actual track of the album. There is that introduction that has reverse sounds and all kinds of shit happening that goes really well into this first track.
When people actually put a lot of effort into their transition and filler tracks.
Yes.
And made them meld with the album and not just, you know, random noise for a minute.
Yeah. And these are some hard pan guitars.
Oh boy. There's so many things in the production of this that are, yeah, I guess of the time.
Yep. The hard pan guitars, not a lot of focus on cymbals.
Yeah, that's what really shocked me. We were talking about listening to the cymbals are like very filtered and very back in the mix. You almost have to listen hard to hear them, which is, I don't know of another song I remember having to try that hard to hear the cymbals.
That's very strange. Now the opening right away with the vocals is like an almost whispered, like, I forgot the word I'm trying to say. Not presentation.
Delivery.
There you go. It's not delivery. It's DiGiorno.
No, it is delivery.
It is delivery. But yeah, so it's kind of like a whispered delivery over these big, like, hits, which to me felt like a heartbeat. Tell me something so typical. A lullaby or something miserable that will keep me up at night. If you really, like, it really has a feeling of a heartbeat.
I did not put that together, because it's like spaced out double hits.
Yeah.
So it could very well be like boop, 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 Wow, that's next level.
That's some next level shit right there. Mm. Also, the song is in 3/4.
See, that I didn't even pick. I'm not good at that.
You're not good. You're not good at that. But so that really adds to like that waltz feeling, and okay. Then those heartbeat hits.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Now that you say that, I can that has that certain.
You can do that 3 count.
Yeah.
And you, like yeah, it has that like. You can't help but like kind of move along with it, but then it has this like big. Like hi-hat rolls, which yeah. they're nice and present and everything.
Wrong side, but
they're on the wrong side from what we're used
you
to.
You can hear them.
It has like the dual vocal comes in with the harmonies and everything like that comes in, and you got this dope big open chorus.
Now, one thing I noticed that you can tell pretty much right past the intro, I think, and it's all throughout the song, and I don't remember if it's through their other songs, but it's musically, it's very busy.
Yes, there's a lot going on.
It's almost like I had a era when we were writing music like, where like every space or like opening at the end of a bar, there's something there.
Yep.
There's not a lot of just open ring outs. There's like a little drum roll, or there's a lot of like guitar harmonics or little feedback noises or something. Like there's always something going on.
Yeah, I have a lot of guitar fills, harmonics, and various parts written down.
Yeah, and it's like it's a thing. There's just you get in, you know, musically writing, and for some reason your brain's just like gotta fill that out.
But I think it sounds good. I mean,
yeah,
I mean they pulled off really well.
Like it does. I don't think it sounds bad. And I mean, I do that a lot myself with like it's full and busy and everything, but there's so much variation though. Like it's just weird little fill noises, but it's like almost different every time. They're not,
yeah,
like they didn't just do a little fill and then keep sticking it in every time they came to a rest like that. It's a, I don't know, I guess they're just like fill in every. Oh, that doesn't sound good.
Fill in every hole, god damn it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were like, all right, we have these spaces to work with. So they did different things in the spaces. But I also don't think it would have worked without it, because it's kind of a, like you go from this real simple, like with these heartbeat hits and the hi-hat roll. There's not a lot going on musically in that section, like in the verses. So when it gets to these choruses, it's just like chaos.
There's like the drums almost feel like they're continually climbing or something.
Yeah.
It's a very forward, like energetic,
the driving
drum section. Yeah. And you've got the octave chords, which always convey that urgency and driving feeling. And also just they work so great for this emo music. I don't know why, but like. When the octave chords come in, you know that's when the feels are really like peaking.
And then it goes back into another softer part, and then the dual vocal comes back in, picks back up again into another chorus, and it has the lie to me, the first lie to me scream.
Yeah, there's not a lot of the real big Matchbook Romance screaming in this song, but there's a couple of real good ones, and there's also, I can't remember if it's that one or not now, there's one scream in a transition where it's like one of those real, like, high, I don't know how to, it almost sounds like a
screech?
Like a bird, like a bird of prey or an eagle, like the beginning of that one Coheed song.
Yes.
Which is
That's the one. It's not this one. It's the one that's when it's by itself.
Okay. Yeah. But that was just like, wow.
Yeah.
That scream by itself would probably sound really weird.
Yes.
But the way that they mixed it into the song, it really does just add the intensity to it.
It's almost like a grindcore scream.
Yeah.
Like that really high.
it's weird, and you wouldn't necessarily think for a song like this, you'd be like, yeah, he screeched like an eagle and it was good, but it fits.
And then they have the bridge, and which has those descending octave chords.
Yes, that was, I checked. It doesn't seem to be the exact same thing, but to me it sounds straight out of that one from Autumn the Ashes song.
It's very similar.
I think it's like the same intervals going down or something, but it's very emotionally intense.
Yes.
Like, it's a very good sound. And you can see why all of these bands in this kind of music like that writing.
I wrote something like that.
We use octave chords all the time.
Like with that descending octave chords feeling to it.
It's a great tool.
Yeah, it works really well. And did you notice in the very back left of the left side, there's a stand-up bell being played?
I did not.
Like an orchestra bell.
I did not. There was so much going on. There's a lot going on. So many things to pick out in the end, and like the last several in sections, it's just kind of like, just feels like it keeps building.
Yes.
So, no. Yeah, see, what I picked out was in the end, in the far right channel, all the way in the back, there's what best I can tell is a China symbol that a lot of the sound frequency has been filtered out of it. It sounds almost like somebody's smashing a plate every measure. It's really, there's a lot of interesting sounds buried in this song once you really start listening with the headphones on.
This is one of those songs I'd love to get my hands on the stems for.
Oh man, like, just
to hear everything solo stuff and try to like rebalance it a little bit. That'll never happen.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a lot of stuff that you can't really hear that now, you know, 20 years later they could.
Oh man, if they put out a remaster.
Do a remaster where everything was cleaned up and didn't sound like it was run through a metal zone.
Give it to like Will Putney or one of those guys.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That would be great. Hey,
you're gonna have a fucking field day.
Since you guys are already listening
and
you're gonna do the 20th anniversary tour, why not do a 20th anniversary remaster reissue?
Exactly, and tour off of it.
Yeah.
So, and sell the vinyl at the shows, new t-shirts, new hoodies.
So you know. Hit us up, guys. We're not really sure what you're doing now because the internet won't tell us.
Right.
Everybody joined other bands at some point. But, you know.
So now we're waiting on Matchbook Romance and Rufio to hit. Oh, there we go. Matchbook Romance
and
Rufio.
Right there.
We're waiting on both of you to hit us up. So I want you all to hit each other up and put this tour together for 2023.
Yeah. We don't even need credit, really.
No, I don't even care. I just want to go.
Just tickets.
Yeah, a couple of tickets would be nice, but I don't even ask for passes or nothing. I'm just, you know, just a couple of tickets.
Just want it to happen.
That exactly. But back into the song. We're almost there. After that Lie to Me scream by itself, back into a chorus, standard, like, but it's still, I think it's it's a bigger chorus. Like, it's building up to the end of the song.
Yeah, there's the standard kind of last chorus variations that we always mention. A little bit of, I think the drum part changes.
It brings in the
rolls from the prior section. I don't know, interlude, bridge. There's like an interlude, bridge, breakdown, like 1, 2, 3. I don't really know which is which.
Yeah. And then it goes back into the bridge sounding section with the drums and the repeated lyrics out into the end. And it goes into those like big hits at the
great ending, especially because like the last at least minute and a half is kind of one continual emotional buildup.
Yes. Pretty much once it hits that bridge,
you're just kind of uphill.
It's just building up to those final hits.
And then you're like, oh, yeah, so sad. Which, I mean, we joke and everything, but like we ate this shit up at the time.
I eat this shit up now. What the fuck are you talking about?
Oh, I mean, I still like the music, and I'm not quite as resonating with the, you know, emo lyrics and everything.
But. I mean, lyrically, it's
they went hard emo.
They did, because this is a either a failed or failing relationship song, either already failed or currently failing, and in the midst of dealing with it.
Yep, it's pretty much.
And I say, cross out my eyes.
Yeah, which I think that was this before Hawthorne Heights. I don't know a lot about Hawthorne Heights, except no, I'm not going there. I'm not going there. I can't do that anymore. I can't make that joke because he died.
Oh yeah. Hey, so it was Ohio Is for Lovers, right?
Yeah.
Ohio Is for Lovers was recorded in 2004.
Wow. Hawthorne Heights stole Crossing Out the Eyes, which is what they're known for. Because this was 2003.
Yeah.
Wow. Those bastards.
Get them. Music police.
Yeah.
What? Right. But so, lyrically, the whole lie to me, give me something worth living for, tell me a reason worth fighting for, give me anything to keep me breathing. Yeah, that's like, I know you're breaking up with me, or I know you're leaving me, or whatever, but
just say that
we're not, so I don't go insane kind of thing. Like,
yeah, like it's either over, or he knows it's over, but
they want to
desperately
hear,
like, yeah, please tell me there's some any kind of way we can not be over, which, I mean, you know, that's
not how that works.
That's the emo life. This is like distilled of like the best of what emo should be, because it doesn't get the problem where bands started getting into, where they tried to be like, oh, I'm gonna be like super poetic, and like it got to be too much.
Yeah, I mean, Metric Romance has usually gotten right to the point.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, obviously it was written for teenagers at the time.
For 2003, yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, you can look back and, like, yeah, some of the stuff is like, but, like, I mean, when you're 15, it's not.
Yeah, this I'd say this holds up a little bit better than most.
Because it's not
direct. It's kind of vague enough to be kind of whatever you really want it to be.
Yeah,
but it still has a point.
It could apply to any sad teenager situation.
Yes.
Pretty much. But like I said, it's not trying too hard.
Yeah.
Which became a huge problem in this kind of music. It's, you know, I'm sure he was going through a breakup and this is what he felt, and he wrote it down. And then, like, no more than that. No trying to, like, everybody wanted, like, a line. Everybody wanted to write a song with a line the kids would put on their MySpace or whatever. I think
they wanted the away message on AIM.
Yeah,
you know,
yes. And it just became everybody trying too hard to get that.
To have
and
that
it's
line.
Like, no. Everybody wanted to apologize for bleeding on your shirt from Taking Back Sunday line. And it's like, that just has to naturally come out of you because of your teenager emotions.
And they're trying to use, like, big words and shit.
Yeah,
and
like, no, man.
My love for you is effervescent.
Like, no, bro, that's a soda. Come on, man. So this is, like, this was, I feel like, still one of the best albums to come out of this scene of music.
Oh, absolutely.
Just well made, well written. It really makes me sad that there's only one of this album,
like, yeah,
because the other one is very different.
It's
them and it's good, but it's not stylistically close.
Not at all. No, they took the other half of their direction and went that way,
which makes sense, because when you're looking at this kind of music, it really is like, once the band got to a certain age, you couldn't genuinely make this kind of music anymore.
No. Then it becomes that distilled down, trying to make the line.
Phoning it in, just trying to milk the scene for money. But no, these guys were like, we're not 17 anymore, so we're going to make a sick-ass, clean guitar, spooky vibrato riff.
God, that riff is so cool.
It is. I don't even, there's like no way to describe it. It's just that riff.
It is a spooky
song. And that solo.
With those octave slides. Oh, man.
Those dudes knew how to write music.
Some good shit. And all right, so that was Your Stories, My Alibis from Matchbook Romance, the album Stories and Alibis. We'll be right back, and then it's Dave's turn.
I was like, I didn't. Am I supposed to say something?
All right, and we're back. All right, Dave, go ahead and get your die, make your roll, and let's see what you get.
The illustrious golden die.
It's happening.
5.
Yes.
They perched on their stilts, pointing and daring me to break custom. Yes. By Seosin.
Yes.
Fuck yeah. Golden Die was worth it. And again, that was They Perched on Their Stilts, Pointing and Daring Me to Break Custom by Seosin off their 2003 EP, Translating the Name.
God, it's such a good song.
Just, I mean, this song, this EP, this whole EP is just a masterpiece. Like, it is one of the best recorded pieces of music.
Yeah, and it's a double 2003 episode again.
Yes.
Double year.
Was 2003 the last time we got a double year too? I kind of thought it was.
That's very possible.
I mean, you can tell where our, you know, teenage peak music listening years were.
Yeah.
So.
Seosin.
Well, I thought the only Seosin with Anthony Green. I missed, apparently, he came back to the band in like 2016.
2016, yeah. I didn't know that either.
Like, they put out an album.
Yeah.
With him, and they're still kind of working on stuff, apparently, so I don't know how I missed that.
Maybe because, I don't know, I wasn't paying attention to Seosin anymore.
Yeah, I didn't associate them and Anthony except for this EP, so I don't know, it just didn't seem like anything that would have happened. You know,
no.
But it's cool, I'm going to have to check it out now and see what that sounds like.
Definitely.
I can't imagine it would sound like this, because it's 15 years removed, and I think some of the other members are different. Well, yeah, because there's only been one continuous member the whole time. So,
and Anthony Green's done a lot of drugs.
Many drugs.
He has outwardly admitted.
Yeah.
It is not a secret.
Sometimes that's what's required to put out the kind of music he puts out. Level of music he puts out, I guess.
You do see that. Unfortunately, you see that a lot.
This EP was the first that I found of Seosin, and I believe I actually discovered it because I kept seeing it mentioned on internet forums of, like, emo, hardcore, whatever music that you have to listen to, because back then that's kind of how we found new music.
Yep, what's those lists?
There was no Spotify playlists and suggestions and everything, so at least personally I spent a lot of time, like, looking online to see kind of what the consensus of, if you saw an album or a band mentioned multiple different places, like, okay, I should go check this out.
Yeah. And I mean, this EP came to be known as one of the most influential post-hardcore releases of the 2000s, like, in general.
And I can definitely see that. I would agree with that. Like, it's musically, it's just so good. The writing, like, every instrument, every song is just, I don't think there's a single part I don't like.
Yeah, this EP is incredible, and it's only 15 minutes long.
Yeah, 5 songs, 15 minutes, but it impacted, I think, a great number of musicians in this general area of music.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like I said, I kept seeing it listed of, like, everybody was like, you have to listen to this EP, like, this EP really influenced me as a musician, or influenced this band, or whatever. Like, and the writing, you can really, there's so many things that you would later hear all over music, but that weren't things before this.
Now, I don't remember when I got into Seosin, but it was definitely later, but it was this EP.
Yeah, I think when I had discovered this and everything was around the time, like, their first full length came out with the other singer.
Gotcha.
I'm not sure. I'm not good with dates for this kind of stuff.
No,
it was,
I mean,
all just back then. But I definitely know this was one of the things of, like, everyone on the internet was like, if you're into the hardcore, post-hardcore, screamo, whatever, you've got to check this out.
Right, yeah, it had to have been, yeah, the 2006, 2008, one of the big Warped Tour eras for us.
Yeah.
Around then, I was checking stuff out, and then this came up. And then I heard this song, and I was, oh man, I was hooked. This intro guitar riff is just...
It really, I don't know what it is about it. It's not super crazy or anything, but it's...
It's the whole thing, the drums, that drum hit coming into it, the strums before it, and then it just has that lead line to it. It's perfectly written.
It is. It's kind of sad there wasn't more music with this lineup. And I don't know, it's weird, because I didn't know until reading for this that said one of the reasons that Anthony left was he didn't like that the band did not include him in the writing.
Yeah, I saw that.
So it's kind of weird that the sound significantly changed after Anthony left, since he wasn't involved in the writing of the music. So you'd think the music would sound relatively the same, and then just the vocals would be different. But even that first full length with the other singer, musically, is quite different.
Quite different, yeah.
So I guess it's just the natural evolution of the band members took them in that direction. But, I mean, this is just, like, one of my favorite music pieces of all time.
Really. Oh, yeah, it's listed on my top 10 songs, like, for sure.
And, like, this, 7 years is also, I mean, every song on here, but, like, I just, all of them, and I have, like, so many memories of listening to them, and, like, I can, like, recite and play along to every different instrument part for every song. Nice. Like, sing along to it even when you can't understand half of the words.
Yeah. You know what one of my other favorite Saosin songs is, surprisingly enough?
Is it Show Me Your Booty Hole?
Other than Show Me Your Booty Hole, because that's just a given.
What is that?
Mookie's Last Christmas. Their fucking Christmas song.
Oh, shit. Now, see, I heard that, but, like, I can't... I've not heard it a lot. I can't, like, recall it in my mind.
It's so good.
Now, was that with Anthony, or...?
They've had so many versions of it. I think they might have put one out with him, but I don't remember. Yeah, it's such a good fucking song. But back to this song.
Yes. Now, I didn't realize, too, that, you know, obviously, at this, you know, for this point in time, this was the only release that Anthony did with the band. But from when the band formed to when he left was less than a year.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Which I also, you know, learning stuff didn't, you know, aside from the writing issue that he felt excluded from writing, the main reason he left was he was homesick.
Right.
Because he's from Pennsylvania and Saosin was in California.
Yes, so that's where Bo is, yeah.
Your typical teenager moves to California to pursue music or whatever, yep. And then...
realized, oh shit.
Wasn't for him.
Not for me.
So he moved back to Pennsylvania, and then a year or two later, I think, is when Circus Survive
sprung up very shortly after that.
Along with also, at various points in time, working on the Sounds of Animals Fighting, yes. Which is another absolutely brilliant band.
Also has one of my top 10 guitar riffs.
Yeah, it's funny because Anthony's, like, involved in all these bands, but it's like he's not playing the guitar in any of it.
No,
but yet
they're all the ones that have my favorite guitar parts.
Just, he works with really good guitarists, yes. Apparently.
Well, yeah, he does. Well, after the whole amazing guitar riff, it cools down into that little, like, quiet picking.
Got you. Yeah, like your clean picked chord. But I mean,
with that cymbal work.
Yeah, the drums are out of control. And I think, you know, everything in this EP is great, but overall, I think the drums are the absolute best, my absolute favorite part of the music.
They are really good.
And which I also didn't know until today, on the recording of this EP, the drums are a session drummer.
That's just insane to me.
That's mind-blowing. Like, the complexity of these parts and how clean and tight and perfect it is, this man did not write as far as I know, these parts, and probably didn't have a lot of time to learn them.
Probably not.
Because Seosin's drummer at the time was also involved in another band that he already had commitments for. So for the recording and when they first started touring after recording, he wasn't available.
Right. Because he had already promised them that he was doing that.
So they had a session drummer for the recording, and then they had a friend drummer from another band fill in for the beginning of the tour until their drummer was available. But that's just the fact that these drums that are some of my absolute favorite drums was done by a session drummer. Just goes to show you, don't ever think less of session musicians. No. Because this is, I mean, it's perfect.
It's so good.
And, like, it's so complex and ever-changing throughout all of each song. Like, there's no, like, oh, he's just playing, like, the same drum beat for the whole song and just does some fills. Like, no.
Not at all. And you could tell that with this part in particular, with, like, the bell hits and things that he's doing. Oh, it just works so well.
In the verse, the drums are kind of almost up with the vocals as, like, competing for the main attention. And the guitar drops, like, way to the background. You have the second half of the verse, you get a little more because the second guitar comes in with the
like, super overdriven.
Yeah, like almost dissonant, but not quite high notes, which would become a mainstay of the scene.
Yep.
Because, like, there's so much on here that you don't realize was not really widely used musically until this came out.
Yeah. But then after they go through that little overdriven guitar part, it really just massive guitar comes in and just widens the whole thing out.
And the guitars, it's very interesting listening, like, up close in the headphones.
Yeah.
They are so hard panned.
Yes.
Like, fully, I'm pretty sure. Like, one guitar is right, one is left.
I believe so.
Or very close to. I think there's a little bit you can hear over, but
that's probably more dealing with, like, your reverbs and your echoes and stuff.
And one guitar is a very low tone, and one guitar is a very high tone, which,
it's very common.
That was definitely a thing, especially at the time. Yeah. It was a good way to get a full sound, especially if you didn't have a wide range of equipment to work with.
Yes. But you just so happen to have a higher amp and a lower amp.
Yeah. that's what happens, you did. And it works. But, yeah. I mean, it's blended really well. It, like, is. When they're playing the same thing or playing harmonies, they sit perfectly with each other.
And then it goes back into that intro riff again. Then you get these screaming vocals. Just fucking, like,
yeah, I mean, this is, like, Anthony at his, like, screamo-iest, I guess. I don't know, because he, later on with Circus Survive, he kind of took it into different musical places. But
right.
This is very, like, that high.
See, well, he already has a high voice, like, for singing and everything. For singing and everything. Wow. For singing and everything anyway. But then he has that really high scream that comes through, too, and it cuts through everything.
It's so intense. Like, it really, with that and, like, the way the music builds.
Yes.
Both of the songs today, actually, very good with the emotional intensity.
Very much, yes. It's a very emotionally intense day for songs. Yeah,
good example of how you can write the music of the song to hold the emotion that you want with the song.
Two very good examples of that.
You want to talk about intensity, I guess, I don't know, breakdown, bridge, I don't know what to call it. They bring the intro riff back, but repeat it, and it's modified slightly.
Yeah.
And then they harmonize it, and I don't know, it just keeps getting more intense. Because the drums in the second part go on with just a full double bass.
Yeah, I called that, like, the it's almost like a solo.
Yeah, it kind of functions like a solo would, but without.
Then that double bass comes in, and it's just driving.
Yeah, I think that, like, those couple bars would be my absolute favorite part of the song. You've got the two guitars doing the harmonized trill intro riff part, and then when that, like, full driving double bass comes in and it's like all of the pieces together is so intense.
Yes. And then it ends in the best drum roll fill. So clean.
It's funny because it's, from a drumming perspective, it is a basic drum fill. Yeah. You know, four on the snare, and then you just go down the toms
with
in order.
Some bass hits in between.
Yeah, so it's kind of one of the first fills you would learn, but somehow it just sounds insane.
Yeah.
Like, it's fast, but it just, it sounds like way more than it is music, compositional.
Right, it's... I don't know if it has something to do with, like, maybe the guitar is going in the background or
I think what it came from, like, transitioning, using that to go out of that, like, intense part into the outro. I don't know. There's a lot of these songs have parts that are not really clear.
Not a whole standard, not standard, but your basic verse, chorus, verse, verse, chorus type. Of structure. It comes back down to structure again, which is what it always comes down to, is song structure. And I think that both the first song and this song, they're structured kind of similarly.
You've got, like, at the first half of the songs, both of them are kind of your, like, intro, verse, chorus, verse, chorus. But then from there, your traditional cliche structure would be, like, either bridge or solo, and then chorus again, and then outro. But these have several different sections after the second chorus that aren't necessarily, like, you know, like, a bridge normally is kind of like a dropout.
Right.
And you get, like, the drums go away.
Or it's your vastly different section. Yeah.
Bridge is normally, like, a down. And I think the Matchbook Romance had a little bit of a down. This really kind of, I guess,
it kind of does, the first part of that little, like, solo part, But they both have the same thing, where when they come out of that, like, I guess it's the second chorus, you want to call it, from that point, they both just build.
Yeah.
Like, into this ending.
Because this comes in, and you get, like, this riff, but they keep the adding and the intensity ramps up, and then it kind of, like, I don't know, that drum fill is almost a crescendo, but then it... The intensity doesn't drop very much after it.
Right.
You get a little bit of a kind of openness as they lead back into the final chorus.
Well, you get the... It's not even really a full chorus either, because they have that extra twinkly guitar part at the very end that plays over the intro guitar riff, but it starts fading out. This is another one of those songs. We talked about it with Coheed, where I really wish there wasn't a fade out.
Yeah, it's like the one... shortcoming of the song is, like, now, having been kind of in that situation with writing and stuff, sometimes you just can't think of a good way to end the song. Like,
that wouldn't be, like, super cheesy, or, like, it wouldn't work with the song, or
now, because, like, the Matchbook Romance song builds up very well to those, like, da 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 drum hits, but I'm sure Seosin tried different things.
Oh, of course.
Past, like, the 70s or 80s, I don't think anybody chose a fade-out as their first choice to end a song. At least not past the 90s. I mean,
there's even a good chance that with this being a fade-out, there may have been something at the end.
Yeah,
and
it could have been,
we're just going to fade this instead.
Like, they did, like, a drawn-out chorus and then something, and then they didn't like it. I don't know. I feel like this isn't the best outro for the song, but then again, I can't exactly say what would be a better one.
Yeah, it's the same situation. So I'm saying it's pretty much exactly like the Coheed one. I wish it was a different way to end the song, like some big ending. Yeah. Could not tell you how you would do it.
And apparently the bands can't either. So,
which makes me feel kind of good, because that means that we're all in the same boat.
And also, it's the final song of the EP.
Right, which I think that's why it works so well.
Yeah, because it's a little better, but fade out's just never a great final ending for anything, I don't think.
Personal preference, yeah.
Yeah, well, obviously, you know, it's all...
Now, one little funny thing we noticed. At about 2 minutes and 8 seconds, in the left ear, there's a slightly out-of-tune guitar.
Yes, actually in the trilly riff part.
Yeah. The low notes.
Yes.
Are what sounds to be very slightly out of tune.
Yeah, to me. Now, yeah. Sometimes that can be like a trick of the recording or the other sounds going on, but it really just kind of sounds like when you hit a note on the guitar and the strings slipped or something.
Really? Like
just a little bit of like...
Like even you were saying, the it might have even been an intonation thing where it's not the guitar out of tune, but there's one spot that just doesn't work right.
Yeah. When you got the headphones on and the volume up and you can clearly hear the individual part, like before you even brought it up, I had grimace. you can just kind of...
Something doesn't feel quite right. But I literally, since I've listened to this song, have not noticed it until now.
Yeah, I did.
Going through and like picking it apart,
which I think that's happened in other songs where there's things that until you really sit down and mentally try to focus in on each track and everything that's happening, you can hear a song hundreds of times and not notice something that's in it because that your brain's it's in some weird background
or
something. You're
taking the whole thing in. You're not. Yeah.
Or, a lot of these things, unless you're listening on good headphones, you can't really hear it or pick it out. It's way in the background.
Which is why they're normally still there, because...
It's like, yeah, nobody's going to hear this. Especially...
Something small like that.
When you're listening to things from a while back in time...
As far as, digital recording.
Yeah, and, you're thinking about, the audio quality at the time, 20 years ago. Like, good quality then... is like unlistenable quality now. So, and even that happens a lot with really old recordings is like something got picked up that they couldn't even hear at the time. And then now that it's been like digitized and, super high quality, there's stuff in the background you didn't even know.
That's right.
Now, the lyrics are vague, I guess.
Interesting.
I mean, it's kind of what you normally get with Anthony Green.
Right.
Which he has a very distinct writing style. It just... I don't know. Because I've always loved the lyrics without really being able to tell you what I thought they meant.
They just fit really well.
Like, it sounds good.
Yeah.
Even if you don't understand what he's saying or what he means, it sounds good. And, of course, his delivery.
Oh, yeah. That helps.
But I do, like, the chorus part has always been one of my absolute favorite lyrical parts of the whole EP. I see a blank notebook page, and it's my life, and there's nothing I can think to write. I fear the thought of not sensing a thing.
Yeah.
I've always thought that was just...
Big fan. Yeah.
One of the best moments lyrically.
Yeah. But yeah, I can see like the whole blank notebook page, and it's your life, and there's nothing you can think to write. Like, you don't know what to do. You don't know what to do going forwards. Like you're stuck and it's overwhelming and
Yeah. And especially it makes a little bit more sense to me now after seeing everything and that like this is a pretty young kid who has moved from Pennsylvania to California.
Right.
And now he's out there, I presume to be alone.
Yeah.
And it's not at all like he thought it would be.
Yep.
And he's having a hard time.
And he doesn't know what the next step is, where he's going to go, or what he's going to do. And nothing is more terrifying than a blank notebook page.
Exactly.
Or like a blank piece of canvas or, even a blank Word document. Like, it's taunting.
Yeah, that's
it's
always...
Taunting.
It's taunting.
It's taunting. It does taunt you. It's daunting.
It's always every creative person's worst part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the blank whatever and... Where to start, how to start, what to do.
Exactly.
Because once you get going, then you're going.
You're
like,
going.
You got something to work off of. You've got something to base off of. But now, some of the other lyrics, I don't fucking know. I don't know if I'm that smart or poetic enough or, Teenage Anthony Green was just doing some weird stuff. but it's also, there's at least a couple lines that no two lyric pages agree on what they are.
Yeah.
A couple lines are different on everywhere you look at the lyrics. Yep. I don't know if there was not lyrics like in the book with the EP, because if there's not, then there's like no definitive
right
thing. Back at that time, that was the only...
That was your source of lyrics, yeah.
And honestly, even some of the lyrics that seem to be agreed on...
Don't quite seem right.
I'm not sure. Listening to it, I'm not sure how people got there. So that Anthony must have written them down somewhere or something, because there's a couple things that it just does not sound remotely like what it is claimed to be.
They definitely got the chorus part thing right.
Yes, that's clear. But there's a couple... Oh, where was it? There was one line for sure that I didn't...
Is it the one towards the beginning?
I think it's like after the first chorus, the second kind of verse part. I hope you don't see the thing, mm-hmm. smile through everyone you've ever met. But like the part at the end.
Oh, okay.
I think that's one of the ones that might be a little different. Like this lyric page says, twist back and end this suffering. I'll dance around. I honestly give up and derobe. But listening to it, I don't know. He's got some weird pronunciation at the least.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And then on top of that, it's not super vocal forward in the mix.
Yeah, it's not like really jumping out at you.
Yeah.
And he does a lot of kind of bending and stretching words.
Yeah, and those, like off time.
Yeah,
and...
to make the notes musically do what he wants. So it could be that, but it's one of those things where... The lyrics are just, I think, always going to be slightly ambiguous, at mm-hmm. least in spots, which, I don't know, kind of adds a little bit to it.
Yeah, I mean, it helps you make it your own thing,
which is nice. Yeah, although sometimes I do that, and then it turns out I thought it was like that, but then it was just an actual lyric, and I was wrong about it for, like, 20 years, and then I'm like, oh, shit.
That happens, yeah.
Been singing this wrong my whole life. So again, that was They Perched on Their Stilts, Pointing and Daring Me to Break Custom by Seosin off their 2003 EP, Translating the Name.
Okay, and again, my song was Your Stories, My Alibis by Matchbook Romance off their 2003 album, Stories and Alibis.
And my song was They Perched on Their Stilts, Pointing and Daring Me to Break Custom by Seosin off their also 2003 album, Translating the Name.
You can find these songs as well as all the songs from past episodes on our Hit Shuffle podcast playlist on Spotify.
And you can also find us on social media, Twitter and Instagram at @hit_shuffle. And we also have a Facebook page that is the Hit Shuffle Podcast. And you can also find us at our website, hitshufflepodcast.com.
And if you would be so kind, if you are enjoying the show, to leave us a review on your podcatcher of choice. It's one of those things that you got to do for the algorithm and all that fun stuff. It's just...
Helps get the pod out to more people.
Yeah, it's a part of it. So we definitely appreciate you if you already have, and we appreciate you if you do.
Yeah.
Now we're going to go ahead and roll the die for your turn, and we're going to see what number you get.
I'll give the fans the magical golden die.
Ooh. That's an 8.
8.
So go ahead and shuffle in 8 songs into your playlist. Let us know what you got. Tell us a little bit about it, and then we'll eventually work on working it into the show somehow. And for the Hit Shuffle Podcast, I've been your host, Matt.
And I have been your host, Dave.
Yeah, I got nothing for this one.
Doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-doom-a-dabba-